Hello everyone, Nexa here with Evolving RPG, and I want to thank you for joining me on this podcast. I'm going to be capping off the DM series, rather this is phase one of the DM series, and I'm ending it with Greytome. And like I said, this is phase one. There will be more DM series in the future, but it will be different people. So most of you probably, if you've been listening to the podcast, you probably already know who Greytome is, but I'm going to give him the floor and allow him to give us some background information and tell us a little bit about him, himself.
Oh. Thank you, Nexa. Well, welcome everyone. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Hope I can live up to the other DMs that have come along here. I've heard those podcasts and they've had some wonderful things to say. A little bit about me. So, from early age, when I was a little kid, I was very much into fantasy novels. I was an avid reader, mostly science fiction, comic books, superheroes, things along those lines. Gaming wasn't something that I was really interested in, early on. That would come along, of all things, on a family field trip up to Canada. We were driving along Lake Superior, and we were somewhere in we had stopped off, and we had to pick up some supplies for the drive. It was a whole long drive we were taking around the Great Lake. And at this store, there was a box set for Dungeons & Dragons. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And I remember seeing that and was like, I got to check that out. So when we got home, I went to a local bookstore, brought my parents, of course, I had to have my parents take me. I was in grade school at this point. This is like seventh or eighth grade. And asked them to take me to the bookstore and picked up, of all things, the first things I did with gaming were the box set of Battletech and the Lone Wolf novels by Joe Deaver. So that's really what got me interested in this. And from that, I've started a lifelong pursuit with gaming, and that led to Marvel Superheroes, Dungeons and Dragons, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness, the Palladium rule set, which it just has been a lifelong pursuit now, running various games. So longtime gamer, longtime science fiction and fantasy fan, and it's a big chunk of what I do now in my free time. And I've got a lot of friends that I've known most of my life, and I have met them through various gaming groups. So it's been a very rewarding hobby to be involved in and to meet these friends I have that have known me most of my life, especially my entire adult life. I met through gaming.
And so how long, give us some years, how long have you been playing role-playing games?
Well, I'm only 16, so no, it's just
what? How did this happen?
Hey, nobody knows that stuff. You don't ask those things on a podcast.
You've been holding off the elixir of youth.
No, I am in my mid-40s now, so we're talking probably 30 years. I mean, we're going back to my early grade school years, so it's just we're talking 30 years of various games. Like I said, I dabbled a little bit with Dungeons and Dragons early on, but then really it was played a lot of Marvel Superheroes, the original TSR rule set, and then Palladium, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Other Strangeness. Those were the games I was running in and playing. Those were the games that other players and friends I had introduced me to, because I kind of fell in with groups that played, and I was like, oh yeah, hey, I like these games, that's pretty cool, let's do that. And got quite a collection going back through the years, of the various books I've had. I've held on to a lot of those. I still have that box set of the Battletech game. I've got that first red box set from Dungeons and Dragons that I purchased. These are things that I've just had to hang on to, because it's an important part of what I am. But man, it's been a 30-year gaming career, running games and playing games.
So, going on with that length, how long have you been DMing for?
Well, the funny thing was, it really will Most of the time that I've been gaming, I have been running games. I've either been game mastering or dungeon mastering, depending on the game system. A lot of times I was the one running the game for my friends. I was really interested in telling stories and got behind the screen. And a lot of times friends and groups I had were looking for someone to run the game. The friends wanted to play. I really enjoyed running the game. Probably more than I actually enjoy playing in a game, which is still a lot of fun. I actually enjoy running a lot. And, you know, so really from the aspect of being behind the screen, running the game, that starts off in early high school when I started running the game. And I was trying to get other friends of mine interested in it. And the only way to do that was I had to run it. I had to learn the rules and introduce them to it. So, you know, from an early time, that was really the role I played, where I was like, hey, I'll run it. How about you create a character and I'll take you through this story or this adventure and this series of events.
And it should be noted for our audience that Grey Tone was the one who actually introduced me into the wonderful world of gaming.
Oh, God, so, that was many years ago. That's right. Man,
and that was a Marvel game. I had actually seen Dungeons & Dragons and thought, what the heck is this crap? I'm not interested in that. But I was an avid comic book collector, and when I first met him, I saw that he had a lot of comic books, and then I saw he had this game called Marvel Super Heroes. So, of course, I was intrigued, and after that, I've been gaming ever since. So, let me just take the time out to say thank you, Grey Tone, for introducing me into role-playing games.
Oh, that was a pleasure, man. It was a lot of good memories. That was a long time ago. It was an ongoing Marvel campaign you kind of jumped into, and it was kind of interesting because I hadn't taken quite as much time as I really should have been kind of explaining the rules to you, because there were certain things that because the group we'd been running for a while, and I was running this game, and everybody knew different variations and things like that, so it just it was an excellent experience there, but a lot of fun, and led to a lot of memories, so.
Yeah, what he's hinting at, he just won't come out right and say it, is that I actually played a character that could manipulate air. And so when I actually finally got a chance to play with other people, because he ran me through a solo, when I actually got a chance to play with other people, we were fighting some type of aliens, and so I pulled up this nice air shield around me. Well, that does nothing against lasers. So within the first few minutes of the game, my character was basically out and he was dying. And so I thought, well, that's bad news. So I started rolling up what would become the greatest superhero ever. But enough about me. Moving right along, Grey Tone. Tell us, what is your favorite role-playing game?
Ooh, favorite role-playing game. That is tough.
I asked the tough questions.
You pinned down on that one, like the favorite game. I think I would have to narrow it down really to I know some of the other DMs have said, well, you know, I can narrow it down to two. Okay, really, as in terms of favorite game, I'm gonna have to go with a personal, even though it wasn't one I necessarily started out with, but currently, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, really my favorite game. I really enjoy fantasy gaming, fantasy stories. I'm a huge fan of Margaret Wise, Tracy Hickman, R.A. Salvatore, you know, huge fan of theirs. Got a whole collection of their books autographed. And it feeds into that whole Dungeons & Dragons world. And I really enjoy the rich background that they have there. A very close number two would be the Marvel Super Heroes game, the TSR edition. There have been other versions of that game that come out. I've run those, but nothing meets. And in fact, I just recently joined a gaming group that is playing the TSR Marvel game, Marvel Super Heroes. Third one after that, just because of all the memories, it's out of print right now because of licensing issues, but although, not necessarily, because I'm going to say the Palladium rule set as a whole, because yeah, I played a lot of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness, but then equally as good there is the Robotech series.
We love the Robotech series.
Absolutely. They took giant mecha combat. If you are into giant robots, and you may not even be familiar with Robotech because it's not as big of a thing as it was back in the mid to late 90s, and late 80s, early 90s is really when Robotech really kind of took off. And if you aren't familiar with that giant mecha combat, if you want to have giant robots fighting giant aliens, great system. And it scales down really nicely to even characters out of the mecha and gaming. They really do a great job scaling that up. So it's just a great gaming system. So I mean, really, I got to give kudos to Dungeons & Dragons. It's my all-time favorite. You know, the very close second is going to be the Marvel Superheroes, followed by the Palladium games, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, All the Strangeness, and Robotech. But we're talking, you know, hundredths of a point that separate that, those three. But unlike the other DMs that have come along here, I'm going to commit and put down, you know, 1, 2, 3. So, but it would be a close,
okay,
close call for me.
So going on the exact opposite, since this is the DM series, mm-hmm, what is your favorite game to actually be a DM for?
I think I'd have to go with Marvel Superheroes because it is a very simple, I mean, really, if you can understand traffic lights, like, you know, green, yellow, red, you know, you're rolling percentage dice. It's a really nice system, and it allows a lot of flexibility, and it's very easy to get players introduced into it, start them game, and as you're going through a game, you really, in Marvel, don't run into these situations that I do run into D&D. I love D&D a lot, but it's, you know, there was a phrase that came up not too long ago that was, Dungeons & Dragons, a 5-hour walk takes 3 minutes, but a 3-minute battle takes 5 hours. And there's a lot of rules. Now, the 5th edition rule set, I know some people have criticized for being a little too simplistic. I kind of like it because I think sometimes the rules get in the way of the game. It's not about the stats on a sheet of paper. It's how that player plays them. And I like Marvel because it's very straightforward, very easy to get into the game and get going. And if there's a question about something, you know what? It's a very simple system that you can resolve pretty much any conflict just saying, okay, here's the set you're going to roll on. Roll the dice. What's the color you get? And, you know, it really keeps things moving quickly without there being a lot of math and a lot of overhead trying to figure out pluses and minuses and things like that.
So I'm going to actually go off the farm here and mm-hmm. change the normal questions that I have just because I want to get your opinion on something.
Sure.
So I hear that you say Marvel. However, how do you feel about some of the other game systems that are kind of more recent, like Mutants and Masterminds and Modern 20 system?
I haven't run Modern 20 system. I did run into actually next to one of your games with D20 Modern, and I liked it. I did like it. Mutants and Masterminds is currently on its, I believe, 3rd edition, if I'm not mistaken. I do have the book over here across the room, I think. Yeah, 3rd edition, it looks like. I like Mutants and Masterminds. I have run several Mutants and Masterminds games. It's just that the D20, there are a lot of rules, and there can be, especially when you're trying to combine powers and do, you know, I have control of fire. Okay, I want to make a flame shield, and I want to shoot flame bolts, and I want to be able to fly using fire generation, things like that, you know, power stunts and other things like that. It's a little bit more of a learning curve in Mutants and Masterminds. D20, I don't have any hands-on experience running the game. I do like the D20 rule set. I mean, it's got some perks to it. I know there are a lot of players that do really enjoy that.
And if memory serves me correctly, the Mutants and Mastermind is under the D20 system as well.
Yes, exactly. Their 3rd edition, they basically said, you know what, we're really going to get rid of the stats. You basically work just with the modifiers, you know. If you have an 18, you get a +4. If you get, I forget, if you've got a 10, you have a no plus or minus. They restructured the rule set where it's still the D20 rule set underneath the hood, but when you're actually playing it, you're just dealing with the D20 plus modifiers. It's not a bad system, but it's, if you're going to pick it up and run it, Marvel does have a much faster and there's still a lot of versatility to it. So, you know, Mutants Masterminds definitely has, you know, a neat system, a good system, but given the preference between the two, there's nothing I can't do in Marvel. Now, the TSR Marvel Superheroes is out of print. You can actively buy Mutants and Masterminds. You know, that's in print, and new expansions are coming out for it. But there is a huge aftermarket support for, an independent support for, you know, Marvel Superheroes, the system. But some of the newer superhero games that have come out, I do like them.
Especially with the age of the internet, there could always be a huge community lurking in the shadows waiting to help.
Sentinels of the Multiverse is actually coming out with its own role-playing game based on their very successful card game. It's going to be broken up over 16 books, I believe, and they're going to structure a lot like a comic book series. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. It's coming out in August, so we might see it at Gen Con this year, but you know, that's definitely another one that's coming out in the superhero genre of gaming. So interesting to see what their take is, because they're going a completely different direction than anything I've seen in the past. So be interested to see how they take their card game and convert that into an RPG.
That will be interesting.
Yeah.
So now I'll get back on the road here.
Mm-hmm.
So for our listeners, I would like for you to share a story where you were the DM and you ran some type of scenario. And then you were proud of that outcome of that session, whether it was a climactic end to a story, a death of a player, death of a mage character, just something that you were like, this is why I DM, and I'm so proud of this moment.
Well, there's one that comes to mind, and I don't mean this as any way of flattering there, because you're interviewing me next up, but the culmination of back in college, you know, we had a lot more free time, and
tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly. So it was one of the few times I've been able to start a campaign, a game story, finish the whole campaign, take it from start to finish, where I had the whole story arc planned out. And I'm like, we're going to sit down, we're going to do this. We had the time in college to do this. And it was a Robotech game using the Palladium rule set. I took the characters from the very beginning. Yeah, I did make some slight modifications to some of the rules, necessarily that Veritech pilots could be, they had the occupational character class, an OCC. And, you know, if you were going to be a medic, you couldn't be a Veritech pilot. Well, nobody wanted to play anything but a Veritech pilot because, hey, who doesn't want to be in the giant robot fighting giant aliens? You know, I don't want to be the guy down on the ground, you know? So I relaxed those rules a little bit and was able to get that working pretty well, so I get the diversity of the group. Allowing different backgrounds for the characters that I enjoyed. But the basic premise of that was an alternate version of the Robotech Macross saga, the Americanized version. For those people that do know Robotech, there's the Japanese version of Macross saga versus the Americanized version. I'm talking about the American Robotech Macross series. The player characters went through this whole series of events where they had to rendezvous with the SDF-1 out at Mars, and they kind of interacted with the SDF-1 and the main characters of the Robotech series at that point. Well, they had to take everything out to get out to Mars, and then they're on the SDF-1 coming back. And that game system actually came to the culmination of the Macross saga story what was his name? The Zentradi that...
Chiron.
Yeah, that's it. Chiron. Thank you, Nixa. Chiron basically launches his final attack against the SDF-1 and Robotech Defense Force. And the characters had to defend against this. Well, the player characters were a part of this massive battle that was being waged. I think the entire final session just was nothing but that fight and the characters trying to get through that, protect as many civilians on the ground. You know, I was delving into a lot of parts of the story that weren't really covered by that. And what ended up happening was your character in particular had actually started out his career as a destroyed pilot and then had been transferred over and then kind of dropped into Veritech fighter training. The premise being, well, the SDF-1's gone. We need pilots. You know, anybody who can pilot Mecha, okay, we're going to give you a crash course at fighter school. And so we kind of wove a story that he was, you know, naturally good at this, and that kind of explained how he succeeded there. But you pulled off a maneuver that I hadn't really expected. I kind of worked in the Mech 2, this giant mecha that your team, you were the commander of this three-man team that was there. They had a new team that was running it, but you still had two of your compatriots that were in it. And you were kind of fighting and covering them as they were kind of cooperating with you. And it was this really cool dynamic that was building up. But they were stationed next to the SDF-1 when Chiron's battleship collides into it, which is a clan that a lot of characters, and if anyone's familiar with the series there, it's a very climatic end. I mean, it's this epic ending to this thing. And, you know, a lot of characters didn't survive that final episode. So as a part of that end storyline, you actually used a badly damaged Veritech fighter to rescue your old teammates. And I mean, I was not holding back on rolls on this. I mean, your Veritech was basically reduced to very little other than an engine, some thrusters, and a wing and a prayer kind of keeping you going there. But you were actually able to manage to save them. And it came down to a percentage roll. And I remember very clearly telling you, okay, you've got to roll these dice. I'm just going to warn you, whatever you roll, that's it. There is an absolute chance, because it was going to be on the crash. There's a crash table, and death of the pilot and everyone else was very much a possibility of that. So I said, you know, whatever you roll here is what you're going to get. There is a possibility you can't survive this. There's no saving throw. This is it. Fate has come down to this roll. You pulled this off. What are you doing? And everyone survived. And it was just, you rolled one of the best outcomes of it. So, but, I remember that this tension had built up. We'd gone through this giant fight. Everybody's at the table, and here it is. You're rolling the dice. Nex is rolling now, and this is the fate not only his character's life, but also these other three NPCs that you had risked your character's life to rescue, which was this epic thing that really kind of came up that I hadn't scripted. It wasn't part of the plan. It kind of unfolded as we were playing the final battle, and you know, you made the roll, everyone survived, and I remember everybody cheering, and it's like, oh man. And I'm like, I couldn't have written a better ending to this. And it just, you know, I set up the scenario, and but we had a great gaming group back then, and you know, that was really one of the best endings to a storyline in a game that I was running. I mean, that really was one of those that sets the benchmark for, okay, it's everything. It's the suspense, it's the action, it's risking it all to save someone else. I mean, it's everything heroes are going to be. And, you know, that was, it brought it all together, and it was just a phenomenal thing. And it's really something that can only happen in a tabletop RPG, because it wasn't scripted. It wasn't part of the plan. It was the interaction of the players with the NPC, me responding to what you're doing in the game and having that flexibility to work with that. And that's one of the coolest things about tabletop RPGs that you don't get when you put something onto a MMO RPG online or something like that. You know, you're able to feed off of it and kind of guide the story where you want to go, and you know, just an epic time.
And just for our listeners, there should be, at the time that this recording, this podcast is released, there should be a story called Valkyries Part 1, and that's kind of an intro into this whole saga that Grey Tome is talking about.
Yeah, that was cool. So I want to dig into that character a little bit deeper. So the only problem was we had planned on continuing that storyline, but I think we wrapped that up. This is the semester was breaking for the summer, and we never were able to pick that up because everybody wanted to kind of continue with those characters and go forward with it, but we never get a chance. But we finished that game. We did finish that entire campaign.
Okay, so you know how this works. The flip side, share a story where it was kind of the lowest point for you being a DM, like nothing went right, or just it was just so terrible.
That would be okay. Everybody, in previous interviews, my gaming style has come up that I am kind of a golden age of superheroes type game master, a little bit more laid back. I like a lot of humor. I like to have a good time. I enjoy the game. You know, we deal with some tough story themes from time to time, but ultimately, you know, I want everybody to have a good time. And so my games do, by nature, have a little bit lighthearted feel to them. With that being said, one of the systems that I really struggled with was the vampire World of Darkness story setting. The rule set was a little confusing for me to work with. And trying to capture the essence of, sorry, Ed, trying to capture the essence of a dark world where there really are no heroes. I mean, it's been kind of snuffed out because it's the world of darkness. There really aren't any good heroes. I tried putting a game together with that, and I had this idea for an evil vampire clan that was trying to move into the city and take over, and the players were going to start out as normal humans then become vampires. And it just, the couple game sessions I had where I was trying to play that game and run those characters that way, it just wasn't clicking. And I felt bad for those players because the game just didn't work out as well as I had planned. I struggled with the storyline. Getting the characters to be evil and just dark, just it wasn't coming off right with my normal type of gaming system. But this particular group of players, you know, when I asked them, like, they wanted me to run something for them. So, oh, what do you want? What would you like to run? They're like, well, nothing like tactical combat or superheroes. And I'm like, well, okay. Well, that pretty much takes out everything I kind of really am good at. So it's that one I really struggled with putting that. I've been in some games where people have been able to do that very, very well. And it's just not... it's not my kind of thing. And that was really the low point. That game just did not come together well. The characters just weren't really flowing naturally for me. I struggled a little bit with the rules and how to use that, because it's really more of a role-playing system, a story-driven one as opposed to stat-driven. And while I thought I had a good storyline, trying to interpret that with the players in this type of environment, it was a challenge. So I really think that was the lower point, where it's like, okay, you know, that's not really something I enjoyed, you know. So it just and it was just because I know the players weren't really having a good time, and that starts me thinking, oh, if they're not enjoying it, then this isn't working out there, maybe I'm not the right one to run the game. So it just I mean, they were very nice about it. They're like, oh, hey, it's good. I'm like, nah, it's just I'm struggling with the storyline. So that group did not last a long time. You know, there was a lot of distance that separated us, and this was before we had virtual tabletop, so we had to do a lot of traveling to get to one location or the other to be able to run the group. So the group was short-lived, but that was always really one where I'm like, you know what, I need to kind of focus on what I can really do well and the types of stories I can tell do well. So it's kind of a low point ahead.
I just want to link on one thing you said as far as your DMing type. Because you're right, it has been brought up in several of the other podcasts, but there's not necessarily, well, let's try not to use double negatives, but there's no catch-all DM type. Players, by their very nature, are a collection of different players. So what one player might like, another one may not like. And the DM job is to give all of those players a story that they will enjoy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So while your stories may be a little bit more lighthearted, there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm gonna throw Angle Cow's name in, who ran a great Dungeons and Dragons story. Very detailed, very organized, but it actually was depressing.
Yeah, and that's not my particular kind of gist where it's, and there are stories like that. There are dark fantasy stories where, you know, the heroes don't really win in the end, or it's more villain centric where you're, you know, there's a Margaret Weiss book, Well of Darkness, and it goes that route where it's not a story about the hero, it's a story about the villain.
Yeah,
and how the villain becomes the villain. So, you know, it's not a happy feel good book. It's got a very dark tone to it, and the stories that I write and the games that I run usually do have a lighter side to them. But yeah, there are players that do like that. I know Ray really runs a Marvel game that is really different than the Marvel games I ran. You know, whereas I ran Golden Age superheroes. Everyone, the heroes are striving, you know, they're held to this higher responsibility. You know, they are superheroes. And, you know, that whole thing from Spider-Man, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. That's really the kind of way I run my superhero games. But there are other that do run them where it gets a little bit more gritty and down into some of the darker sides of things, where it's like, okay, what if the hero is pushed to do something that they're not comfortable with, or that's kind of borderline evil or wrong? I tend to not focus on those types of situations as much. You know, it's good versus evil, and the players do have choices, and there are challenges that are going to come up, but I don't take it into that thing where it's like, okay, you know, you're looking at your whole philosophy of life and what you are, you know, in the game. It's just not the style I run, and the type of game that I typically run.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I just want to add to that. There's nothing wrong with that. So my next question for you, how do you deal with, first of all, I'm going to ask you, but I already know the answer. Have you ever had problem players? And if so, I know you have had to have problem players. How do you deal with them?
Well, with problem players, it's kind of getting at what the root of the problem is. Is it someone who isn't able to really work with the group well, where they kind of they've got a character concept that just does not work with the other players? And I'll go as far, when we're creating characters, saying, okay, you really need to figure out a reason why you're all working together. Okay, if someone, one or more characters has a player or a character that doesn't really jive with someone else in the group, it's like, okay, you need to come up with a reason why you two are working together. You know, because I'm not running a game where someone's going to backstab somebody else. Other times I have had to deal with some players that were just disruptive to players in the real world outside of the game. And
disruptive? How?
Well, there was a situation that came up where I actually had a group of friends that was playing, and one player was not going to be able to make it because of our work schedules. This was during college when I was home. I had a summer job, and some of the people I worked with had joined a game that I was running. Well, everybody wanted to be in the game, but, you know, because of time off of work and work schedules, there wasn't always possible. And there was a situation where a person actually called in sick to work to make it to my game. Well, I knew about this because another player was talking to me and saying, yeah, this guy was going to give me a ride in today, and now I can't make it to work. He called in sick, and I got to figure out another ride, and I'm going to get docked time. And then because it's last minute and I'm calling to take the time off, I've got to make it up. And there were ramifications where we worked if you took off at the last minute, and he didn't drive, so he was counting on this person to give him a ride. Well, this individual shows up at the game that night, and I was like, well, wait a minute, weren't you supposed to give a ride? Oh, no, he found another ride. I'm like, no, he didn't. He called me earlier today. You called in sick. You know, what are you doing here? You know, why are you doing this? You, by not going into work, you told him to be here for this game. You basically told him, well, you've got to make it your own way to work. Now you're impacting his life and his livelihood. You know, he counts on this money to, you know, pay bills and things like that he has to be responsible for. And now he's going to face ramifications at work that, yeah, you don't really care about them and those ramifications, but he does. He likes working there. He wants to continue working there, and he doesn't want to get in a lot of trouble for not showing up and be irresponsible. And I had to pull that player aside and have a heart-to-heart talk to him. And I actually canceled that game that night. I'm like, I'm just not in the mood now. You know, I'm not dealing with this kind of drama with life. It's like, you can't impact other people's lives because you want to play a role-playing game. You know, this is secondary. This is a fun thing we do in our free time. We can't always make it. Hey, I can't always make it to games. That was a challenging one because that was dealing with someone on a very personal level, that it wasn't just, okay, the group's not getting along. This person is kind of suspending work, and it's impacting other friends of mine just to make it to a role-playing game. And that was a very difficult situation to deal with. I handled it tactfully. I didn't want anybody to feel bad about things. I'm not that type of person, even though it was a very good friend of mine, and I was very upset about it. I was, okay, you got to stay calm, and, you know, you can't control what other people do with their lives and what decisions they make. But when you're impacting one of my friends, you know, I'm there for my friends. And, you know, someone's, you know, needs help, I'm going to help them out. in this situation. Someone had kind of taken advantage of a good friend of mine, and it had impacted them negatively. And I was not happy. And the fact that they did that just so they could make it to one of my games, you know, that's not flattering. That's not something I was impressed by. It's, you know, you're kind of getting your priorities mixed up. But thankfully, that's only happened once, and that's kind of a rare occurrence. In other cases, it's just a matter of getting players to work together that may not have the same goals. And I've been fortunate because I a good group of friends that really do work well together. And a lot of times I do preface it to saying, okay, you guys can play what you want to play, but make sure the group has a way to work together, because I don't want to deal with a whole lot of inter-party fighting when I've got a story I'm trying to tell and we're trying to work together to get this objective completed and overcome these challenges.
Or you don't want to deal with a whole bunch of lone wolves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
so tell us, what do you find to be the most frustrating part of being a dungeon master?
I think one thing is you have got to know the rules. You know, you can't just come to a game session and say, you know what, I think we're going to play. Let's just sit down and play. So it does get a little frustrating that it's just like, okay, I've got to read and keep all this stuff tracked in my head. I've got to remember all these details. So sometimes just that you've got to be absolutely on top of your game. You can't just come into it and just say, yeah, I think I'm going to do it, you know. Yeah, you could do an ad hoc, and then I think players kind of understand that. You're saying, like, listen, I'm just whipping something together. I've done that. I think that's, you know, one of the things where it's like you can't just casually just pick up a brand new system that you've never run before and just say, okay, let's run this, because, you know, it's just not going to work. It's like, okay, I'm going to run it, so give me, you know, a couple days to read up on the rules, research the game, get a feel for how it works, and then go with it. Because I've had players that have understood rule sets in games better than I do, and then, you know, there was one situation where a character's combat, he was kind of doing it blow by blow in Dungeons & Dragons. And the way D&D's combat system is that it's kind of each role represents several different things. There's a couple. It's not one for one. It's an ongoing combat, and you're kind of this interaction, you know, like as you're attacking and parrying and doing things like that. There's a lot into the role because there's a couple seconds of activity that's covered by that. And he wanted to blow it down, like the first punch and then the second punch, and then he strikes this way. Well, I'm going to counter with you know, this blow coming underneath, and it's like, wait a minute, you're adding a whole level to this combat that is really just going to bog things down. And it was frustrating in that, I'm trying to say, you know what, listen, you can talk to me about this, but usually the way I run my games is, okay, the roles kind of play out. You tell me what your strategy is. And then I kind of narrate back, okay, this is how this plays out. This is what your roles get you. And the character was kind of going in there and he wanted to narrate his own combat and the result that combat had on the NPCs. And I'm like, wait a minute, you know, one of us is running the game, the other one's playing it. So, you know. So that's kind of frustrating when that happens, you know.
Okay.
There's really two things there, but they're frustrating. But, you know, I guess one's just kind of like, oh, I can't just pick up the game and run it. You know, just you couldn't really take 5th edition D&D and just say, okay, I'm going to run this. I've never opened this book before. Yeah, let's just do this tonight. You know, or Pathfinder, it's just going to be like, okay, we're all going to have to work through the rules and, you know, kind of figure it out as we go. You do need to do some prep. You know,
and that's the key takeaway, prep, because I feel the same way about your story. You need to have a good amount of story because players seem to have a way of tripping you up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So now for the million-dollar question, sir. What advice would you offer to other dungeon masters, whether they're just starting out, they're seasoned, or they're just somewhere in between, but what have you consistently learned as your many years of being a dungeon master that you would like to impart to others?
That is a good million-dollar question. I think it would be that we don't focus on a lot of the minuscule details. You know what? Is the room 10 by 10 or 15 by 15? Unless that is absolutely critical to that scene, you don't need to get things broken down that detailed. the characters are looking, or the players are looking for that experience that you have, the encounters they're going to run. I would say, you know what, have a good story that you've got. Have a concept in your head of where the story is going to start and where it's going to end. Your players will help you kind of fill in some of those details. But it's really your job as the game master, or the dungeon master, to guide that group down this path that you want and tell the best story that's possible. I'd also say, you know what, don't be worried about making mistakes too. So, you know what, you're going to flub it. I've been there, you know. It's like I've had games where, you know, that vampire game, I just for whatever reason wasn't clicking. It wasn't working well for me. And you know what? And I was getting stressed out about it, and I just wasn't enjoying it. You know what? We're all there to have fun. And I have not had a single player in all the years that I've been playing ever come to me and say, "Your game sucked. That was wrong." You know what? If somebody does that to you, if they're in your game and they're like, "You know what? This is really no good. You're not good at this." Don't take that criticism to heart. The players that I know, the ones that I've known for years, I mean, we're talking decades that I have known these people and gamed with them. Have there been better stories than others? Absolutely. I tried a murder mystery one time. I really did dropping clues, and they're like, "Well, it was kind of obvious, you know, but then we enjoyed it. It was different. I want to do something different for them." So we kind of mixed it up a little bit. You know, don't be afraid to put a story out there to run the game. You know, it's just get in with a good group of players that you know, that appreciate the fact that, hey, you're taking the time to organize this. All the players I have really appreciated that. And I don't worry about making mistakes. You are going to, I guarantee you, you will mess something up. You will forget a detail. You just, you know what, roll with it. You know, let it go. You know, don't get tripped up in the details of an exact map. You know, just have a good idea of the experience that you want to have. And then as you go through this, you'll find yourself more comfortable in working with different scenarios where, okay, I kind of have an idea what the rooms look like and what I want to do, and kind of go with it. Work off your players. What do they like? What do they want to do? You know, kind of get a feel for them. You know, as you build more experience, you'll get more comfortable with that. If you are an experienced game master, I would really reinforce to you, don't get too caught up in the minuscule details. You know, keep focused on, you know, we're all there to have a good time. You as the dungeon master, the game master, and the players. It's got to be fun for everybody.
And I just want to add on to that, the fact that when a player comes to you and say, "Your game sucks," even though they shouldn't be doing that, I just want to add to our listeners that communication is always the key.
Yeah.
So you do want to have
absolutely
communication back and forth with your player, because not only as you being the dungeon master, Greytone, are you giving up your time, your players are also giving up their time. Absolutely. So there should be some type of communication going back and forth. And I can honestly say from experience in being in your games that there is a lot of communications going back and forth. And we had discussed some of the games, some of the things that I did not particularly like that wasn't necessarily earth shattering. And I'll just give you an example, the listeners. I used to always play Greytone Marvel games. And then I asked him, "Could you just throw a little randomness in from time to time?" I would just like something that doesn't necessarily have to deal with the mission, because it just seemed like I was just focusing on that mission and nothing else mattered. So I wanted a whole new world out there of possibilities. And I remember the next gaming session, you did it. There was some side quest where I was stopping a robbery, and I said, "What does this have to do with the mission?" You said, "Absolutely nothing." And the broadest smile went across my face, because I felt like I was actually in a world where, even though as a superhero I had this mission, I had to stop and help somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that. Yeah. It was really a wake-up call for me to add a little more depth to the game, because you don't want to be too linear with it. I would also caution anybody who, especially newer people getting into the hobby, that are worried that, the story world, it's going to be too late. I got to add this. No, go with it. You know what? You'll learn it. It's just like everything else. It's practice, practice, practice. With Nexa, you're very good at saying it. You know, with writing, same thing with game mastering or dungeon mastering. You know, it's practice, practice, practice. And you get the feedback. Like, you gave me that feedback, and you're absolutely right. Everything can't be just like go to A to B to C to D to E. You got to have a little diversion there, and you know, I found that it was fun to throw a couple of red herrings. And you don't tell the players that this robbery thing doesn't have anything to do with the play, with that storyline. You know, I used to kind of bridge campaigns together, just learning a bunch of one-shots and then figure out a common theme and then tie it all together. And it's like, oh, well, I'm like, well, I just kind of put these out there and just kind of saw where the storyline went with it, you know, and kind of go with that. So.
And with that being said, I would like to plug the site and let you, the listeners, know that if you go under the tools section, you can rate your game master. You can give them good feedback and hopefully shape the game that you're playing in. And you can do all this anonymous, or you can leave comments in the section and let your game master know it's you leaving the comments. You know, you have some options, but just want to plug that. So, with that being said, I also want to take this opportunity to thank Greytone for taking time out of his busy schedule for this interview. And I would like to give you a few minutes for any final thoughts or anything you want to talk about.
Oh, sure. Well, final thoughts for everyone would be, why do you want to be a game master or a dungeon master? Why do you want to run the game? And my answer to that references a Dragon Magazine article from many, many, many years ago. And this question was asked by one of the editors of Dragon Magazine to one of the more well-known, the names of the people involved in this, I've forgotten them over the years, but the essence of the interview is still the same. And the question was put to this person: why do you like to be the Dungeon Master, specifically Dungeons & Dragons? Why do you want to do that? You've got to do all the work. You've got to manage all the monsters. You do all the stats. You got to do all the prep work. You got to know the rules better than everybody else. You've got all this work that you have to do, writing stories, things like that. Why do you want to be the game master? Why do you want to be the dungeon master? And the interviewee's answer was, well, he's like, pretty simple. As a player, I have my turn. I take my action or two on my turn, and then I wait until it's my turn again. As dungeon master or game master, it's my turn every turn. It's always my turn. So why would I not want to do that? I get the most fun out of it. And that really was what kind of struck it for me. That's really how I look at it. It's like, as the one running the game, it's always my turn. I can do all kinds of cool things. And I can inject myself into the storyline through my non-player characters, you know, through the events. You know, there's a favorite character I might have that I kind of plug him in as an NPC, and, you know, he's able to work with it. So I'm kind of going along with the group. My NPCs are doing my thing, you know, and I'm kind of rooting for my monsters to get some good hits in, you know. So it's just, you know, I want to do the story. But that's really the thing that I find most rewarding about it. That is, I'm always get a chance at a turn. So, you know, but this has definitely been a hobby that I enjoyed, and I'm looking forward to continuing with it. And, you know, new games come up. You know, I definitely recommend you check out your local game shop. If you get a chance to, you can go to something like Gen Con and be surrounded by people with a similar interest in it. And, you know, just say, hey, keep plugging away at it. And if you think you might be interested in it, you know, a lot of your local game shops have groups that meet. So if you don't have a group of friends that's interested in it, but running the games is a good way to bring other players on. If you want to get some of your friends involved in this, if you're just starting out, you know what, offer to run the game. Roll up the characters, run them through, see if it clicks with them. So, but definitely encourage people that are interested in it to pursue it. It's a lot of fun. Nex and I have been friends for decades, and gaming's been a big part of that. A lot of my friends have been. And, you know, I just thank everybody for taking the time out of their schedules to listen to this podcast. I hope you found it informative. Look forward to seeing you all on Evolving RPG.
Thank you so very much, Greytone. And once again, we'll say thank you for the people who are listening. We really appreciate it. I'll take this time to also say, if you want to discuss this, can post something in the comment section, but not while you're driving.
Yeah, absolutely not. So.
And you can also follow us on Twitter at Evolving RPG. You know, we're trying to get that Twitter thing off. But once again, I just want to say thank you again, Greytone. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And goodbye, everyone.
Yeah, thank you, Nex. I appreciate the opportunity to share with everyone. Everyone, take care, and hopefully see y'all soon.